Well, thank you. It takes a little more nerve to do this meeting, to speak at this meeting than at most normal AA meetings. I know my own story, but this meeting always kind of sends me back to a little bit of review. And sometimes I pick up things that I don't normally pick up. Sometimes I go back to the old favorites. You heard the step about continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. And so, of course, that's a bit of a two-part process. So I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Leslie. I'm an alcoholic. Whew. Okay, then. The heat's getting to me, maybe. I looking through the materials, the things I used, I looked through the big book. I looked through AA Comes of Age, and in the end, most of what I have to say is going to come from the 12 and 12, because that's kind of the, one of the primary sources. If you're not, I don't know who's new, who's what, but this is about the steps and traditions with little chapters. One of my old favorites, As Bill Sees It, which is kind of compiles a lot of things that Bill Wilson wrote or excerpts from all of the other AA literature, the big book and 12 and 12 and grapevine articles and letters of Bill. And this I just found. It's called The 12 Steps for Everyone, and it's written by a psychologist, I guess. I flipped through it. It's kind of more aimed at emotions, but I did look through their description of the 10th step that gave me a little something extra. So I've been involved in the program. I've been in the program for a good many days, and it takes some effort sometimes to not let things get stale. I like to keep an open mind and see what else there is out there. Not that I want to run away from AA, but sometimes it's a fresh set of eyes gives me a little something extra. So with that in mind, step 10, of course, it's one of the first of what some people call the maintenance steps, some people call the growth steps. The 10th step is an ongoing practice, and it is done, we begin to practice that step after we finish the first 9, which is a first big house cleaning of a lifelong, of all the stuff we did, all the stuff I did, all the bad thoughts I had, all of that. Up to the point where I got sober, to look in the past and clear up the wreckage. And now here we are, at today. The past is dealt with to the best of my ability. What am I going to do going forward? So for me, it's important to remember recovery. Recovery program really isn't a one-off. It needs to go on. It always, for me, my recovery always requires and deserves attention, as long as I want to hold on to it anyway. Okay, I can let it go, but for today I don't want to. That's how long we do that. As long as we want to be okay, we work steps. As long as I want to be okay, I work steps. I stay in touch with the program. I do what I know has brought me to this point anyway. So that's what continue in my mind means. We carry on. We're not done. We're never done. I'm never done. So I want to refer a little bit to the 12 and 12 at page 88. I know you don't have it, and just bear with me. This helps me structure my thoughts, believe it or not. But it talks in this book, it talks in the Step 10 section, it talks about when we approach Step 10, we commence to put our AA way of living into practice day by day in fair weather or foul. So, it's about living going forward. And then comes the acid test. Can we stay sober and keep in emotional balance and live to good purpose under all conditions? And that's the test. really anybody can just put down a drink. It's putting down a drink and not being a jerk. Putting down a drink and some tougher than others, right? Yeah, some tougher than others. But facing what happens, you know, over the years and into the present day, you know, I hear stories of, well, what happened to you? Well, why did you go out? Why did you pick up? Well, my mother died. I lost my job. I got a new girlfriend. You know, it's like, well, you know, these are all life things. Everyone faces these things. So that's what we do here, is to learn how to live with things that happen to everyone. You know, my daughter and I were just talking about this. It's one of these things, you know, if you're alive and you interact with people and you come to care for some people, the chances are you might face the death of someone you care about someday. It's just a fact. It's, what do we do about it, though? It's a life thing we all face. It's really not an excuse to drink. So that's what where the program comes in, learning how to live with things that are part of life. So I guess off my soapbox for that. But, you know, this section talks about making soul searching a regular habit. It's part of living in the present for me, okay, to do an inventory, to continue, because the first 9 steps didn't make me perfect. It didn't take my humanity away. I still have ups and downs. I still have excesses, and heaven knows I still make plenty of mistakes, of errors in judgment, shortness of temper, not as nice as I could or should be. And a lot of times I owe an apology. I owe something. But I wanted to talk a little bit. I wanted to go back to As Bill Sees It on page 48. And I marked this stuff a couple of days ago. And I don't know if I remember all the reasons why. But now I remember the reason why. Here's why. This is also from the 12 and 12. But it talks about living serenely. When a drunk has a terrific hangover because he drank heavily yesterday, he cannot live well today. But there is another kind of hangover which we all experience whether we are drinking or not. That is the emotional hangover, the direct result of yesterday's and sometimes today's excesses of negative emotion, anger, fear, jealousy, and the like. If we would live serenely today and tomorrow, we certainly need to eliminate these hangovers. This doesn't mean we need to wander morbidly around in the past. It requires an admission and correction of errors now. And that's been important to me. I don't know about you, but I've felt that. I've had circumstances where I have been angry, where I've fought with people, where I've run myself through all kinds of emotional ringers, and it feels like I've been drinking for a week. You know, I've come off like these emotional jags, and it is, you know, it amazed me to find that in a book, you know, to this emotional hangover. For me, it's real. I guess I'll leave you to your own experience. I've experienced it. And there's another mention, because this has been my go-to book for many years. Yeah, this is why I was looking at this. Change we must. We cannot stand still. This is also from, this is a grapevine excerpt from February of 1961. We have to grow or else deteriorate. For us, the status quo can only be for today, never for tomorrow. Change we must. We cannot stand still. When I was very new, I was told, when we come into the rooms, we're either always moving toward a drink or away from a drink. We're moving toward recovery, good health, good living, or we're moving away from it and towards sickness and eventually to resume in use of our alcohol and everything else we use to kill our pain. So this talks about that, and that's what step 10 is there to help with. Really, you know, I thought these steps were torture, and the longer I'm around and the more I see and talk to people in various stages of addiction and recovery, it's an opportunity. It really is. I have a second chance to live better if I do these few simple things. It's a great opportunity. Many people don't get to do that. So how to do it? You know, as Bill sees it, again, talks about a daily review. It's a systematic step because it refers to a method. It's page, is that 296 or 86? Here we go, 296, and this is an excerpt from page 96 and 97 of the 12 and 12. Often as we review our day, only the closest scrutiny will reveal what our true motives were. And that, for me, is a lot. You know, I want to put some lipstick on that pig and make it look prettier than it is. You know, I do, of my motives. But if I'm honest with myself, I have to truthfully say things I do are not always best. Anyway, to carry on, there are cases where our ancient enemy rationalization has stepped in and justified conduct which was really wrong. I'm guilty. The temptation here is to imagine that we had good motives and reasons when we really didn't. We constructively criticized someone who needed it when our real motive was to win a pointless argument. Or the person concerned not being present, we thought we were helping others understand him, when in actuality our true motive was to feel superior by pulling him down. We hurt those we loved because they needed to be, quote, taught a lesson, but we really wanted to punish. We were depressed and complained we felt bad, when in fact we were mainly asking for sympathy and attention. And those are kind of some things I need to look at myself toward, you know, to just kind of check through. You know, it's not, those are the things. Sometimes, you know, there's motives underneath the motives. There's the nice motive I want to tell myself, and then underneath it can be the true motive that's maybe not so flattering, maybe a bit self-serving, maybe nasty. But, you know, in the systemizing of it, I looked to that, and actually this book, The 12 Steps for Everyone, talked about the spot check inventory. That is something I use. I have used it. I continue to use it. And that's kind of whenever, a spot check. And I use it whenever I don't feel right. And, you know, if a person works steps and tries to work a program, when we don't do the right thing, we suffer for it, even if we're suffering ourselves for it, because we know we're wrong, and we can't take a drink and dissolve it, but we know we're wrong. So it's whenever we're disturbed, upset, out of sorts, I've used all of that, and I've had focus on the issue of what's going on, and ask, is there an apology needed? Is there some correction? And I know I feel bad now when I do the wrong thing. I just do. Yeah. It's part of the charm of this meeting that we have a little musical interlude, you know? Is that Beethoven? Is the Song of Joy? Okay, all right then. See, I only look dumb, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover. But anyway, the daily, there's that. So that's whenever we're upset. You know, sometimes for me, the last one I can think of that really was a spot check, it was a small incident at work. And I had done, you know, there was some banter back and forth, and the description of it isn't so important as is the fact that the way I talked to someone, kind of, I felt might have let them feel diminished, okay, in the banter and excluded from the conversation. And that bothered me. And, you know, it took me a day because it's the nature of our business and people were in and out. And I finally had to say, like, I'm sorry, I don't like to do this, and I did it to you. And I don't like to let people feel small anymore. And well, I didn't say anymore because they, you know, this is work and they don't know all about me. But, and, you know, and the person accepted it well. But the most important thing is I felt better. See, even that correction didn't necessarily need to be made for that man, my coworker. It needed to be made for me because I was uncomfortable. If I'm uncomfortable, I can't deal with you. If I can't deal with you, I can't look you in the eye. If I can't look you in the eye, I can't look me in the eye. And that's real important. That's when I need to pick up a drink. So that's what that's so important over. There's a daily review, and that talks, you know, goes back to as Bill sees it, and the checklist of, you know, the big book talks about where have I been selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, you know, and it's a daily review, and also kind of helps keep to the focus that this is a day-by-day program. So every day bears some consideration or other, you know, even if it's just a quick, you know, did I do my checklist? Am I having any conflicts with anybody? You know, if I am, what are they? Do I need to do anything about it? If so, what? Is it going to bother me? That's important. The last aspect of the 10th step is more of a periodic review. Sometimes some people do it like annually, every 6 months. When some life change happens, you know, we live our lives, you know. We marry, we divorce, we finish school, we move, we change jobs, we get jobs, we lose jobs, we develop an illness, we find a cure. You know, things that change, and sometimes we need to check our perspective on that. I've done periodic follow-up reviews. I don't know if it's right to call it another fourth and fifth step. I've called it that. I don't know if it's a periodic 10th step. I know that's one of those ongoing chicken or egg debates that we love to have in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Do we take the steps once and then live on maintenance, or do we go on an ongoing circle of repeating the steps again and again in sequence forever? What do we do? You know, I guess whatever you do, if the steps are being used and you're staying sober, I guess it's okay. For myself, I'm okay using 10, 11, and 12 as an ongoing program. And if I feel the need to dig deeper on something, I feel comfortable going back to do that as well. But whatever you call it, I don't know if it really matters, but the structure of this is considered that there's a periodic, deeper 10th steps to talk over new things. New issues. You know, we always see things differently too. First of all, the longer I live, the longer I stay sober, the more life experience I have, my perspective changes. Things that I couldn't see then, I can see now. Things that didn't bother me because I just didn't get it, bother me now that I do get it, and then I need to address it. So it's as simple as that. For me, underneath it, you know, we always talk about happy, joyous, and free, you know, that what we find when we get sober and work a program and find our happy balance. But the flip side of that, and earlier in the book, we talk about restless, irritable, discontented. And if I can label how I feel as restless, irritable, and discontented, it's time to pull out the 10th step and start looking at what is troubling me. Because it's always me. Underneath it somewhere, it's me. Even if it's them, it's me how I react to it. It's me how I'm dealing with it, which, you know, may or may not be productive. But restless, irritable, and discontented. If I feel like that, it is not, that's not a happy thing. That's what gets me in trouble. Like I said, this 12 steps, when I dug through it, it looks like they're trying to work with Emotions Anonymous, that people are, you know, the 12 steps have been applied in, to many things in many ways, and this seems to be mainly addressed at unbridled emotion, let's say. I won't say I read this book deeply. I read the 10th step portion and some of the preface and foreword to figure out what the book was about. But the most interesting thing that they said in this book that in my mind applied to me, an alcoholic trying to stay sober and live well, in this book, they talked about guilt being the quickest way to regress to unmanageability and picking up. And it's a quick step away from our sickness. It blocks our spiritual growth. So part of my task is to avoid the guilt. And I can take the guilt very easily, but to avoid guilt, not by living, pretending I'm perfect or trying to live perfect, because I certainly can't do that. The way I can avoid the guilt today is to own up to mistakes I make and to correct them as soon as possible. As soon as I understand that there's something not right about what I did, or something that maybe is not how I would want it to be or how I would have behaved. That book also talked about a periodic digging deeper, looking for the motives that we may be hiding from ourselves. I want to go back to As Bill Sees It, because again, it really is, if you don't have one, I highly recommend this book. And if you can see it, if you're here, you see how beat up this book is. And it started out brand new with a nice orange paper cover, and the paper's faded. I've got stuff taped in it. The bindings all fell apart and taped together. In fact, my daughter, some of her baby handwriting is in here. Okay, you know, I've used and used this book. It's gotten me through much. I've got stuff stuck in here. But anyway, if you don't have one, it's a great, if you don't want to buy 15 different books, it's a great way to pull together a lot of stuff that's from the AA program, not the psychology of AA or the rehab program or anything like that. It's straight up old school AA, all in one place from a lot of sources. So I guess it's the Cliff Notes of AA. But I want to share this with you before we call it a close here. I'm close to it. But this is a section from Bill Sees It, one of my favorites, on emotional sobriety. And it is an excerpt from a Grapevine article from January 1958. So there's really nothing new under the sun, okay? But what it says is, if we examine every disturbance we have, great or small, we will find at the root of it some unhealthy dependency and its consequent unhealthy demand. Let us, with God's help, continually surrender these hobbling liabilities. Then we can be set free to live and love. We may then be able to 12-step ourselves, as well as others, into emotional sobriety. So that's out of the Grapevine. I guess the last things I want to say is that it's not possible for me to stay sober and not make my best effort to live within the guideline of the steps. I can't do that. It's earlier in one of the stories in AA, the lady talked about that it's just incompatible. To drink and live the steps is not possible. To live the steps and drink is not possible. They just don't mix. So the ongoing inventory and ongoing being honest with myself as possible, and talking to you when I need to get this clear in my head, you know, what's going on and what I need to do, that's an important part of staying on the rails in the program. And I guess lastly, it sounds real, I don't know, you know, virtuous, and the bottom line is, I'm not comfortable anymore. I can't walk around with undone stuff. I just don't feel right. I need to take care of it. I just can't live like that anymore. And the 10th step is a great tool for me to just stay honest and to take care of things as they come up, because it's so much easier than letting them pile up. So that's it. That's all I have.
Thanks, Leslie. And you might remember now is when we get to ask questions.
And there she goes. Okay.
Hi, it's Leslie. Hello.
Hi, Bridget. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Bridget.
First question, what's your sobriety date?
February 23rd, 1981.
God bless you. Let's see, that would be 34 years?
35 years. God, I had my 35th anniversary in February.
Congratulations. Congratulations,
so,
Leslie.
Yeah, I was young.
Still are.
And I guess I could say, too, I didn't go to a rehab, and I like to mention that because some people seem to think they can't find recovery without going to a rehab. I am living proof that a person can get sober in the rooms and be really screwed up, okay? I was really screwed up. I worked crazy hours, and I did not go to a rehab. I did get sober in the room. So,
that's all right. Thank you for answering the first question. That's congratulations on 35 years. The second question is, as you have walked through the steps over the years and examined every day taking the 10th step, has your awareness of your, when we were wrong, promptly admitted it, what if things may have occurred that you might have felt were wrong, has your awareness increased over the years by practicing the 10th step?
I think so, because I become more awake to my surroundings, I become more awake to other people, and the fact that they have thoughts, needs, feelings as well. And as an active drunk, I couldn't care less what you felt like. I just, you know, that's the fact. So I think that's yes. And it's practice, you know, and finding what works, what doesn't. And, you know, sometimes people tell you what mattered to them and what didn't. And my first sponsor was a great influence, and what she told me was, you know, if you're sober, at least you got a chance to learn from your mistakes. If you're drunk, you're just doomed to repeat the cycle over and over again. She, you know, so I was raised well in that regard, that it was okay to make mistakes. As long as I stayed sober, I had a chance of correcting it and learning and getting better. So I think the answer to that is yes. And as time goes on, just as we age and have more experience, and then when you add use working steps and being surrounded by like some great sober people to sound things off of, it's kind of tough not to, I think. So thank you,
Leslie. Thank you for your lead. Excellent. When you're working with your sponsees, do you recommend they do a 10th step inventory? Do they do it every night? What do they do with it after they've written it? Those kind of things.
Well, I haven't sponsored in the past couple of years because of some of demands, but the fact is over the years, I've never really asked people to write 10th steps unless they felt the need, because to me, it's an ongoing thing. If that's what helps you put your thoughts together, fine. If not, it's not of the, you know, this big, you know, when we do 4 and 5 and 8 and 9, we have this big morass of a lifetime of stuff, and that bears, you know, the writing is crucial there. I think if you think the writing is crucial there to help sort out your thoughts, yeah, go ahead. But some things are just more obvious than others, and the longer we're sober, it's more obvious, and sometimes it's more just being ready to own up to it. So kind of yes and no, I guess.
Other questions? think I see one in the front of the room.
And you would too, wouldn't you? You wouldn't let me get out early, right? Oh, okay.
Thanks, Leslie. You did a great job, and I'm glad that you came out, and you did a great job of explaining.
But did I stick to the topic to your satisfaction?
And you stuck to the topic. That's really good.
Oh, thank you.
Because I rate these things at home after you guys are all gone. But anyway, Jerome kind of asked part of my question as far as how you deal with people when you sponsor them. And I know that you've been sober a long time, so things become pretty much automatic as far as, you know, you're comfortable in your own skin. Is your experience when other people come to you and ask you for advice, do you ask them if, like, do you do a 10-step?
Not in those words.
Right, but I mean...
Not in those words, but I would, when they do, have you considered that? Have you talked to anyone about that? What do you think's going on underneath there? You know, do you think it's as obvious as you think? What if you dig deeper? So, that would be 10th step material.
Uh-huh.
So, I guess yes and no.
You're doing good at these yes and no
I'd
things.
Say... But that,
I could almost guess what profession you
I
are.
Know, but you know, I know. You know, but the fact is the label is important, but the substance is most important, because underneath the 10th step is what's going on, what's happening underneath there, is there any, you got any subterranean thing that you're
right, so
that,
do you help
trying
them
to bury?
Kind of work that dialectic
yeah,
process to get beneath that, you know, like
yeah.
the peeling of the...
To peel it away. To
right.
Sometimes I can be good at asking an uncomfortable question
yes, that's
and
a,
putting people on the spot. You know, what's really happening here? What is it you're not telling me? What is it, you know, what do you not want me to know about?
Right, so like if somebody just says, I'm angry, and you go, well,
what's
who
that
is it?
About?
Exactly.
Well, what's up with that? Who are you mad at? What happened? Did they do something to you? Why would that make you so angry? That seems a little out of proportion. Do you think that's scratching something a little deeper? Because that angry seems out of proportion to the what you're describing to me as being the cause of your anger. And that's sometimes that's a big cue that there's something going on, an emotion that's an emotional response that's way out of proportion to what we say provoked it. You know, so, and I know I did that. I didn't go to AA rehab, but when I was sober about 8 years, I went to adult child of alcoholic rehab. That I needed to go to an inpatient place. And what I was finding out there, what prompted that in the end, was out of proportion responses to things that, you know, if you are ready to spit flames over something that's a kind of a normal daily annoyance, that's me, you know, that's something that's wrong with, you know, if I want to react like that, that's something wrong with me. You know, I mean, if you accidentally knock my coffee over and I'm ready to kill you, that's not right. That's an overreaction, and so there's, you know, maybe there's something going on with me there instead of just accepting the apology and let's all mop this up together. So, does that make sense to you?
Okay, any other questions? Thanks again, Leslie.
Thank you.